This week, the Working Tools podcast is on the road at the Conference of Grandmasters of North America, being held right here in Seattle, Washington. So our format's a little different. We're going to have a series of short interviews with the attendees. We hope you enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, brethren all, welcome to the Working Tools podcast, a casual conversation around Freemasonry. First, it's important to note that our thoughts and opinions are our own and do not reflect those of our Grand Lodge or respective craft or concordant bodies. Please connect with us and ask questions via our website at theworkingtoolspodcast.com.
So continuing our interviews on day three of the Conference of Grandmasters here in Seattle, we have buttonholed a brother from England. Sir, would you introduce yourself?
How nice of you to introduce me like that. My name is Paul Engham. I'm now an officer of the United Grand Lodge of England, but I started life right the way back in 1971 when I was initiated into the Middlesex Lodge, number 143. For which purpose I had to escape from Naval College. One of the very few people to get away during the first week of term.
And you're the Grand Chancellor, sir?
Yes, the Grand Chancellor is a rather specific term. Our Grand Secretary found himself some years ago too busy properly to address the fact that, well, now I look after 233 Grand Lodge recognitions throughout the world, and the load of that is very considerable and requires specialist knowledge. So as Grand Chancellor, I'm responsible for the external relations of the United Grand Lodge of England. And it's worth saying that, of course, not like other Grand Lodges, we actually have some 30 places in the world where we have districts or groups of lodges, which are English lodges overseas. I do not look after them in any way administratively, although, of course, it is often the relationship between those lodges and the parent sovereign Grand Lodge in their territory that bring interesting opportunities for conversations.
And In trying to explain the Grand Lodge system to non-Masons or to new Masons, I'm often tripped up by the fact that every Grand Lodge is sovereign, but we all sort of defer to the Grand Lodge of England as its as a sort of the first among equals, in especially for recognition purposes. Does that mantle fall on your shoulders then?
Well, I must say that it is a responsibility, because we are well aware that if we say something untoward, people will pick up upon that, and it will be taken as not the law, but certainly as strong guidance. But we try not to speak in a way like that. We do genuinely believe we're not the world's policemen. We absolutely are not the world's policemen. We genuinely believe that we set a good example. We try to live up to the reputation and standards established by our forebears 300 years ago when our Grand Lodge was founded. But we don't ram those down the throat of other people. If they wish to follow our example, they can do so. We do only recognize Grand Lodges that are both regular in their formation and regular in their practice. So we expect them to maintain the landmarks of the order, particularly belief in a supreme being. But beyond that, we don't expect people to follow us, and we're delighted when people say nice things like you just had.
Well, and you said you don't like to say anything untoward, but please go.
Now you're trying to entrap me.
Would I do that?
It's interesting when we say that we are regular when we follow the landmarks. I guess I didn't realize what specifically the landmarks for the Conference Grand Masters was until I was reading one of our past Grand Masters has a publication that he writes, and he's on the Committee for Recognition, and so he outlined the three elements that are primary for the Conference Grand Masters to consider regularity. And so, of course, one of those is belief in a supreme being. Is that the only item that you know that is considered a regularity kind of globally? But because of your experience?
No, it's a much more complicated process than that. Because, I mean, for example, the volume of the sacred law must always be open and within sight of the members when a lodge is open. Even though many lodges will also have many other volumes of the sacred law there that brethren upon which brethren can take their obligations. You may not know. I'm a member of a lodge that's in Chennai, which falls within our district of Madras. We still use those terms. My lodge there, the Archibald Campbell Lodge, routinely has 6 volumes of the sacred law open on the pedestal because we have 6 different religions there. They're represented. And so that's very important to us. And many of your listeners may perhaps be familiar with, and if you aren't, please go and read it. Rudyard Kipling wrote the most wonderful poem, My Mother Lodge Out There, which talks about his experiences in a lodge where so many different religions and cultural traditions were within that, the brotherhood of that single lodge.
That's a lot of what Masonry is about. Is about forming those bonds with people that you, I mean, you and I, for instance, never would have met outside of Masonry, and getting to have these conversations and these bonds.
Indeed, it's a remarkable privilege going overseas and finding that you could be welcomed into a lodge. And if I can just put some more detail on what you said earlier, when a lodge applies to the United Grand Lodge of England for recognition, we have quite an extensive process whereby they complete really quite a long form which goes into the practices of that lodge. And we try to do due diligence on it and make sure that, for example, they don't compete in their territory with another sovereign body. The important thing for us as a Grand Lodge is that we can offer to our membership that experience that you have just described. What's important to us is that brethren can visit safely overseas and that we can welcome visitors from overseas and not bring disharmony into the lodge. And therefore, once we recognize one Grand Lodge in a territory, unless there's a good reason locally to do so, we don't recognize another. A big exception, of course, here is in the United States of America, where for very good historical reasons we recognize both a state Grand Lodge and a Prince Hall Grand Lodge in all of those states where those two bodies acknowledge one another's existence and have some form of treaty of recognition, even though they don't necessarily intervisit routinely between their bodies. And there are one or two other places as well where we have a similar arrangement.
We just got to speak with a brother from Germany. I guess he was saying they have 5 Grand Lodges in Germany that all work together.
That's a particular case. Germany is a very special case where a special arrangement was made, and the United Grand Lodges of Germany is a body that makes the life somewhat simpler than it is, for example, in Brazil, where in a federal country like here in the United States of America, every state has not one, not two, but often 3 sovereign bodies which cooperate very closely together, are themselves sovereign, but they have intervisitation. And we recognize in 2 of those states, we recognize all 3 bodies, and I expect that number will increase over the time. But it's quite hard work doing all of this.
I can imagine. And In my head, you would also be dealing with letters from other Grand Lodges saying, Brother John Smith is going to be visiting next year. Please extend him the courtesy when he shows up at a lodge in Middlesex.
Well, this is London being such a heavily visited city. I can only do my job because I sit on the shoulders of 2 wonderful permanent staff. I have an assistant called David Roberts-Jones, perhaps known to some of your listeners, who is the assistant Grand Chancellor, but he's my assistant, so sitting in Freemasons Hall, and my redoubtable secretary, Kerry Bias, and they spend a lot of time on that. Even more so, we have a lot of brethren who actually arrive in London and don't have such a letter in advance, but bring with them a letter saying that they're in good standing and that they paid up their dues and so on. And we try, where possible, to arrange somewhere for those brethren to visit. There's over 1,200, 1,200 lodges meeting in London, so there's usually an option. But I must point out that it is a major work, and we'd much rather have it that people have let us know a little bit further in advance, because it's a major time-consuming activity.
I can imagine how just... I'd like to visit your Grand Lodge of England someday. Is there a how long is that window? How long ahead would you like to know before I show up at your doorstep?
The problem, of course, is that the protocol is clear, because it has to come via your Grand Secretary. So it's more a question of how your local Grand Secretary will look at that's our end. And of course, there's also the possibility that the longer you tell us in advance, it might get lost in the weeds. So, so I'm not going to give you a definite answer to that. But we try and provide a welcome where practicable. What we don't deal with is if people contact us out of the blue before they arrive in London. Don't go through their Grand Secretary. This is something that breaks protocol, and we do not take kindly to that sort of approach. And that's nor does any Grand Lodge. That's an international rule. And with increased travel nowadays, of course, this becomes increasingly, well, it's a good feature, isn't it, really? But the protocol for it has to be respected.
You mentioned the Brazilian connection. We understand that the International Conference of Masons is going to occur in Brazil. Is it next year or 2 years?
It is. It's taking place the end of...
Oh, it's this year.
This year. And it's taking place in Paraná. That's right at the border between the Argentine, Brazil, and Paraguay. And it's hosted by the Grand Lodge of Paraná and the Grand Orient of Paraná, two sovereign bodies that share that territory. And the United Grand Lodge of England is not a member of the World Conference, but we are an observer, and we often send observers. We are quite likely to have an observer there.
Are you going to get to go to Brazil then?
May be attending. I'm certainly hoping to attend. I have actually been to the Iguazu Falls before, which is one of the wonders of the world. So it's an exciting prospect, possibly, to go back there for a second time.
So I heard that you gave your speech yesterday to the Conference of Grand Secretaries. Is that correct? Our Grand Secretary seemed to find it very...
I gave a speech from the heart of me, but more particularly our Grand Secretary, about our program master Jonathan Spence's 7-year strategy, started 2 years ago, which is looking at continuity and change. Continuity, because we continue to maintain the landmarks of the order and have as an aspiration, there's a brother who attended a meeting 300 years ago, would find familiar features and be comfortable in a lodge meeting today, but at the same time using modern technologies in such a way that young men find a comfortable place to work and one which suits their lifestyle. So, for example, I'm speaking now on a means that gets to people that they can listen to when they're out on their morning run or otherwise busy. And that's to somebody like me, it was an unfamiliar concept, but it's one that all the young people, and I have a lot of young friends in lodges in London, find very natural. I'm actually a member of several lodges in London that come under what we call our university scheme, which is one that's set up to allow undergraduates at university from the age of 18 to have a good experience while they're at university. I'm a member, for example, of Australia Lodge in London, where all the ladder officers are under the age of 30 and are Master Masons. So it's quite a lively environment.
So you said there are 1,200 lodges in London alone. It boggles my mind. We have, I mean, in the whole state of Washington, we have like 140 or something, 130. So it's
yes, it's a much bigger enterprise. And of course, administering that in a way that you nurture talent is important. Not everybody who joins a lodge, of course, wants to attend any other lodge. I know many, many Masons who have never visited any lodge other than their own. And I think one important thing that's very different about our lodges in London is that almost all of them meet a maximum of 4 times a year. Some only meet 3 times a year. And people often travel a very long distance into London to attend these lodges. And a brother, once he's sort of got his family well underway and kind of got a bit more time, and of course you don't have that when you're young, do you? You might do when you're very young, what your universities say, but after that, families and things, work get in the way. But once that's passed, people in England quite often belong to 3, 4, or 5 different lodges. And some of those might be special interest lodges. For example, we have lodges in London for cigar smokers or rugby players, or because they're old boys of a particular school. So it's there can be a lot of reasons for forming a lodge.
One of our members of our lodge belongs to the Brewmaster's Lodge. I don't know if there's more than one or not, but there's a Brewmaster's Lodge that he belongs to.
Well, indeed, and London is a place where beer has occasionally been drunk.
For sure. So you had mentioned before we started, you were talking with one of our members from our Grand Lodge, and you indicated that this is a relatively new, you hadn't been a Grand something or other before necessarily, other than Grand Tyler or Grand Swordbearer, which you have the height for it, by the way. we've joked that a couple of our Grand Swordbearers have been shorter than our Grand Sword.
No, the sword that is carried in front of our most worshipful Grand Master, who is a Prince of the Blood Royal, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent. It's an impressive item, like a sword of state. And so most Grand Swordbearers are people who have been officers in the military. I myself was an officer in the Royal Navy, and we've recently had Royal Marine and Army officers. So it's normally a military person who does that. But it's quite correct. And I was initiated at the age of 21, but it was 29 years before I became an officer in my lodge, because I was serving in the Royal Navy at sea, therefore could not guarantee to be at all our 4 meetings in the year, and therefore could not take office, and did not take office. So by the time I had gone through the chair of that lodge, I was already quite elderly, I suppose is the word. 50-ish. No, so
that's not elderly. I don't know what I'm talking about.
So I was never a provincial Grand Officer. Very, very briefly, I was the Grand Sword Bearer within the Metropolitan Grand Lodge in London. Then came straight in as a Grand Officer and found myself as Grand Chancellor quite shortly afterwards. So it's been quite a swift, progression. We don't have something called a Grand Line here in England. That Grand Line, which prepares people for being Grand Master of a state Grand Lodge, that is something with which we are not familiar. But it works very well here, and I've been very very interesting to meet and discover more about how that works in practice. Every state Grand Lodge, of course, is slightly different.
Are you expected as Grand Chancellor to serve for multiple years, or is it just a one-year appointment and you're out?
No, very much not. It's a very specialist function. What we refer to as Masonic recognition is quite a specialist subject, and so I've no idea how long I will be asked to maintain it. I'm 73, for heaven's sake, but I've been doing it for 3 years so far, but of course that included time during the pandemic. I haven't yet discovered whether I'm being reappointed next year, but I think I probably am going to be. That's up to the Duke of Kent.
Do all appointments come from the official Grand Master, not the
The
Duke.
All appointments in Grand Lodge, including that of the Grand Master himself. The Grand Master himself is elected or not annually. And then he appoints his officers, including his Program Master, annually. So we never have anybody given a longer term than that. Although in practice, very often they are reappointed for a second time. There are some posts. For example, our Grand Director of Ceremonies has traditionally always been for more than 1 year, because that is a role where experience is absolutely crucial to the running of ceremonies in the manner which we do.
You indicate elected or not. Is that... That was a subtle wordplay there. When you say elected or not, is it...
It is an election, and an election always has the possibility. The option is always there. For example, the masters of our lodges are elected annually, but what will quite often happen now, in accordance with the rules in our Book of Constitutions, is that there will be a nomination at a particular meeting, and a brother will be put forward, and his name will appear on the summons, and then at the next meeting, the master will say, on the summons, the name of so-and-so has been offered as worshipful master. Does any member of the lodge demand a ballot? And at that point, another candidate can stand up. In Grand Lodge, in recent years, this has happened with His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, who has been proposed and seconded. At the next meeting, such a statement is made, and usually the whole assembly of Grand Lodge bursts into immediate, spontaneous applause.
Sure.
And so he is elected by acclamation.
Perfect.
And is he an... He's not just a figurehead of the... He actually participates in the day-to-day management of the Grand Lodge?
His role contains a number of very important prerogatives over which he is very pleased to take direct action. And so exactly how it works in detail is beyond the scope of what we're talking about today. But he's very much the leader of the United Grand Lodge of England.
Because I can see, admittedly sitting here several thousand miles away, I can see his day job, if you will, taking up a lot of his time.
Yes, and he's... I'm sure he would not mind me saying that he's getting on in years, and so he now does very limited foreign travel. And so, for example, the Program Master takes most of that load from him.
Well, thank you very much. It's been wonderful. Appreciate you taking the time to visit with us today. And welcome to Washington. I guess we should have said that in the beginning.
Yes.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here. This is actually my first visit to this coast of North America. So I'm very delighted. It's slightly frustrating I don't get to come and see some of the marvelous scenery nearby, but I'm hoping to get a chance of doing that in the next couple of days, actually. I'm taking the train tomorrow, God willing, up the coast across the border to King Fearing, Canada, to Vancouver.
Excellent. It's a wonderful train ride. We've been into Vancouver many times.
I'm looking forward to it very much.
Really,
I'm a train enthusiast, too.
really enjoyable. It's a wonderful trip.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye now.